2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me today in the co-host seat is Carlos Collazo, our primary draft analyst. What's your exact title?
I think my exact title is national writer, but draft writer is fine too, Jeff. And I'll happily take the passenger seat. I don't know if I can get a co-host credit on the fantasy.
You're co-host on this episode.
I'm happy to be here with you.
We make sure everyone owns half their masters when they record one podcast with us.
Beautiful.
But been a couple weeks since we recorded. I figured would be interesting to bring Carlos on, maybe dive in a little bit to an article that he just recently published that went over kind of reviewing the debuts of 2026 first rounders. Before we get into all the different names, it was an excellent article. You kind of looked at the numbers, looked at the performance, looked at some of the underlying numbers as well, and kind of compare and contrasted it with, you know, the previous pre-draft scouting reports. More of a bigger question here. How much value do you put into these pro debuts, particularly with first rounders? And a lot of guys we're going to talk today are college players, and we have a ton of information and sample size with those guys, even with wood bats for a lot of them. So like how important is that?
I think it's really tricky to figure out like what is the appropriate amount of reaction that you're doing, because you obviously want to factor in the most updated information you have, and the competition in pro ball is different, and what these guys are doing with wood is different. And so ideally that is going to lead you to newer and better information with these players. But I think especially for the high schoolers, and like you said, we're mostly going to talk about college players today, I think just because of the nature of like how the debuts work and this year's class. But there have been cases in the past where guys have really come out and struggled. And I feel like I've leaned maybe too much into that and downgraded my views of the player on really what was both a small sample size and also maybe not an environment that was ever conducive to success for these players. I don't think the current minor league system is set up to where we have here's a great avenue for high school players to go and get appropriate competition in this stage of the calendar. Maybe it's a little bit easier to read into college players, but I feel like more than anything, I'm trying to in recent years and moving forward, be very careful about like, if I'm making significant changes in how I'm viewing a player, maybe I would be more aggressive on pitchers. Like just if we're seeing new pitches, I feel like it's easier, you know, pitchers, Jeff, you're really great at this, but like if someone's coming out and throwing a significantly new pitch, I feel like that can change my view of a pitcher much quicker than how did this hitter do in 15 games. And so I'm trying to be cautious, but at the same time, I can't say that it's not exciting to get new data and to just track where these guys are. So hopefully it's like useful. I don't know. What do you think at this stage when you're looking at it? You're kind of taking these guys on away from me. You do a lot of work on the draft side, obviously. So the handover is not some stark thing that you come in with no background. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, it's funny, Carlos, right? Like I think you can look at a couple of examples from last year of guys that, you know, came out, you know, post-draft and looked way better than they looked in college. Ethan Frye being one with the Astros who really struggled beginning of the year, got hurt, and has actually been really good in the second half, kind of refound some of that form, but hasn't moved as quickly as I think you probably would have expected based on what we looked at. The other side of the coin is a high school player, and that's Tate Southesine. Yeah. And I can remember looking at Tate Southesine's underlying data and being like,
it was so bad.
Really good, but it's not standardized yet. Like he had a huge 90th percentile, but it was like,
he didn't hit
the ball very much. So like when you have like a 40% whiff rate, you only play like, you know,
and his swing decisions were crazy too. The chase rate was insane. Everything was on the ground. This is the one I think back to, and it's like, this is why I need to be hesitant to be really negative, because his 2026 season has been great.
And I think it's you compare and contrasted hitters and pitchers. And I think that's a good point, because with hitters, changes take so much longer to really like take shape and then produce. And like, what do I mean? You drop a guy's hands, right? Like I know like a big talking point right now on Twitter is like PCA with like kind of the flat hands, you know, on the back shoulder, kind of above the shoulder elbow, to like lower hands, elbow below the shoulder, etc. Like, I don't know the specific date that he made that change. It might have been over an offseason, whatever. I
think it was like May 29th.
But there might be like a struggle period for a couple of weeks before like the adjustment fully takes shape. But like, he might be hitting off the trajectory and like, it looks way better. And he might be in batting practice and like, yeah, this looks good. Like, you're synced up, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just a matter of like actually like letting the rubber meet the road, and it can take a little time to adjust. We right. could be seeing that directly out of the draft, where guys go to these like post-draft bridge league type camps, because there's some sort of like onboarding period with all of them. And they're maybe making adjustments in the cages with these guys for 2 weeks, and then kind of like fail testing it out at an affiliate and being like, let's see, like, you know, if we can push him, and if he struggles, like, whatever, then we know, okay, like, we might get even more buy-in from the player if he goes out to an affiliate and struggles and is like, yes, yes, let's work on this more, and he's willing to come back for a November camp or something like that. I'm obviously like, this is all hypothetical, but I think that's a lot of what we might be seeing, especially with some of these high school guys that I yes. don't want to read too into it. On the other side, what you brought up with pitchers, pitching can change quickly. As soon as a guy starts to show something, more velocity, a different pitch shape, starts throwing something that, you know, like, I know Paul Skenes like didn't throw the splinker in college, comes out, you know, his first pro season, he's throwing this nasty, like 70, 80 grade off-speed hybrid pitch. Like, that stuff is very easy to see immediately and being like, this is good. You may not know if they have consistency with it, but at least in terms of like projecting stuff, what's in the arsenal, pitch quality, that kind of thing, that standardizes even with the eye test, like really, really quickly. So right. I think it's easy. You're not going to see as many pitchers come out and do anything new right now, frankly. Right. Maybe, but probably not. More than likely, the guys that are pitching, you know, I know we're going to get a Jackson Flora debut, I think today or tomorrow. It's going to be, you know, two innings and then he's out of the game. And yeah. maybe he makes a second appearance at AA. It's like what Liam Doyle did last year.
Right. The only pitcher,
The
only pitcher in the first round who's made an official debut so far is Cameron Flukie. He's had three starts. It was one inning, two inning, and I think like maybe like 2.2 or maybe three innings. Like, they're all abbreviated.
Sure.
Most of these guys are not going to get activated at all because they're just coming off a spring season. And I think right now we have four players who have 10 innings in official games from this class. So you're not going to get a heavy load of pitching generally. Yeah,
exactly. That's more of a springtime conversation. That's when you see the Anthony Ianson, you see the, I'm calling out Red Sox, but they have had two of the bigger post first round breakouts, Peyton Tolley, obviously the year before. Both those guys showing more velocity, different shapes, just being more effective and being like, holy cow, like this could definitely be something. You're kind of looking more at like some of the college guys, but I think that's why it's fun to watch these guys, maybe catch a couple of games, get a starting point. It's an interesting part of like the, you know, the track record blurb. It's the easy last sentence to put in there for the handbook. Mm-hmm. So like, I appreciate the guys that debut.
Yeah.
But you know, unless they go and like pull the Nick Kurtz where they go to AFL, there's probably not a ton to take away. That said, now that we've talked through this for 10 minutes, let's take something away from these debuts.
Let's do it.
I think we were both Rock Chalowski over Emerson guys. Certainly you were, and I think I wasn't, and then kind of was toward the end. In terms of like the actual draft, in a real life standpoint, I think the fact that Chalowski is the type of defender he is at shortstop and what the value of a guy like that is, even if it's only an average bat long term, just a super safe profile. In fantasy, that maybe isn't as exciting. And I think you're maybe a little bit more willing to take on like a longer runway to the big leagues with a guy like Emerson. And you don't care so much if he's a shortstop or a third baseman or whatever, as long as he's hitting.
Right.
So when you put on your fantasy hat, which I know you don't do often, but let's say you put on your fantasy hat for a moment, do you kind of, can you see the reason to sort of flip-flop Emerson and Chalowski? And this is notwithstanding in the debut or whatever, long college season for Rock. So much
for sure. Yeah, I think most of this like Rock versus Grady conversation is probably going to happen outside of anything they're doing in their pro debut. Neither of them have played a significant amount. Rock's already shut down for the year because of a wrist soreness issue. I could see the case for Grady because of this. The speed component to me is the biggest tool difference that I feel like you can pretty comfortably say, like, Rock Chalowski is never, he was never in college. He doesn't run at the level to expect a significant volume of stolen bases. That just doesn't feel like a part of his game. Whereas Grady, I think, is an above average runner. If he winds up being a plus runner, I don't think that would be surprising. He's been a very effective, efficient, and aggressive base runner in high school. I could see that continuing to be just an element of his game that really Rock doesn't have. At the same time, I go back to the power conversation. I think a lot of who you prefer from a fantasy perspective will depend on how confident you are that Grady Emerson gets to the sort of power that Rock Chalowski's already shown. Rock is a few years older. He's hitting the ball harder. He has more raw power now. I think his swing is also more conducive to in-game power currently. Grady has this beautiful left-handed swing that is very much a hit-first, all-field sort of approach. I think we've seen enough players in the past who are naturally gifted hitters who will eventually start pulling the ball more frequently and tapping into that power. For me, if I'm making a decision on it, it's like, hey, do I think that Grady is going to get to above average in-game power? If I think that, then maybe he is a more exciting player. I would still lean towards Rock because of proximity, the lack of projection necessary, and the fact that he does have that power right now. Where are you at with kind of that conversation?
So I am Emerson over Rock, but I think some of this comes down to like just general preferences, especially when it comes to fantasy rankings. Like if all things being equal between a high school player and a college player, especially on the hitting side, at least I'm going to lean toward the high school guy. When it's pitching and it's college versus high school, I'm always leaning toward the college guy. I just think there's a little bit more upside in terms of what it could turn into. No, I think the speed component is really interesting with Emerson. But I think it's going to depend on your team a little bit too. Like if you're in a situation where you end up with a number one pick and you're a shortstop away from like really competing, I think Chalowski might make more sense. Mm-hmm. The other side of the coin there as well, you draft Emerson and then you could trade him with somebody else and like get a better shortstop than Chalowski. Sure. But I can see what's attractive about that depending upon how easy or hard it is to trade in your league. Not every league is easy to trade in, right? but, you know, I do think the nice case study here that we've seen over the last couple of years is Walker Jenkins, which is like this beautiful, you know, picturesque sort of swing. The hit tool was there. There's some projections. There's some athleticism to buy into. Maybe Emerson doesn't have as much as Jenkins does, but Jenkins has finally gotten there. And it was like funny how the progress happened, where it felt like it was like better angles. And the next year, of course, he was always hurt, but like better angles. And it was like the EVs are really good, but the angles are. And then it was like everything kind of came together this year. And he's finally, you know, he's really hitting for power. So I kind of wonder, like, buying into the hit tool sometimes. And I also think the aesthetics part of it, when people see the two swings beside each other, I do think that more often than not, you're going to have people leaning toward Emerson in a lot of leagues too.
For sure. It's a very pretty swing.
Well, it's the tough part of doing fantasy rankings, right? Because there's a personal bias that's put into it, of course, but there is a certain point of like ranking where you're like, I may like this guy more, but this guy is like way more valuable in terms of like a trade asset right now, you know? And then you're kind of rank it and then call it out as like, hey, this is like something that you could potentially exploit as like a sell high or a buy low or whatever. But
I will say
so many components of it, but it's an interesting conversation between the two.
Yeah. My final comments on the Emerson Chalowski debate. I do feel like typically I do think the high school hitter compared to an equivalent college hitter, I would tend to think the high school player has more upside and just a greater chance to have a bigger ceiling. I do feel like that ceiling versus floor conversation with Rock and Grady has kind of gotten a little bit out of hand, because I don't think that Grady has the sort of secondary tool set that you typically see of the elite high school hitters. I think he is a very hit first sort of profile who's very solid, very reliable at all the other tools, but I don't think he has the same raw power that a Walker Jenkins did at the same age. I don't think he's the defender or runner that Max Clark in the same draft class was at the same time. I mean, even Jacob Lombard, all of his secondary tools in the same draft class are better than Grady Emerson's. And so for me this year in covering this draft class, Grady Emerson in a lot of ways felt like more of the typical college player where there's a lot of safety and security and confidence in the hitting ability. Whereas both Rock and really Von Lackey, and most of this is probably better for like real life baseball than fantasy, because both Von Lackey and Rock, I think, have a chance to be 70 grade defenders. How much does that really matter in fantasy is a question. But I think both Rock and Von Lackey's secondary tools are more exciting to me than Grady Emerson. Although, again, the speed component, I feel like, is the one separator. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I've also long been on the Rock Chulowski is the clear number one in this class. So just take that, that kind of bias and where I'm sitting. If you're listening and trying to decide who you like, well, just know that. Yeah.
And the post draft numbers, put those aside, the EVs were good. The EVs were, I mean, he was hitting the ball hard, and I think there's something to work with there. And I don't think he's going to have the same issues in terms of like directional stuff that Dylan Cruz. And I also don't know if like, the thing with Cruz is funny, right? Because we both really liked Cruz coming out.
Yeah, that one still haunts me, Jeff.
It haunts us, right? But I don't, and I think you're probably with me here, based on like his swing decisions and like the zone contact, I really didn't expect that stuff to crater the way it did in Pro Bowl. And, you know, I don't know if this new Nationals, you know, player development machine kind of figure things out, because it's very different from what they were doing previously. But he's another one of those guys. You have to wonder if he ended up like another team, would he be better off?
Rock never had the same sort of like pull and lift questions that you had with Dylan Cruz, or the same hot, like ground ball. Like for me, the offensive question for Rock Chulowski is like, is he going to chase a little bit too much? Because if you compare him to the elite college hitters, like your Travis Bazanas, Nick Kurtz, JJ Weatherholtz, like those guys had exceptional contact skills, and they also had really advanced swing decisions, whereas Rock has kind of improved that area of his game. In the past, it was a bit of a weakness. I think his sophomore and junior year, it was fine. But he's never been this like elite swing decisions sort of hitter. So that would be the one area that I would be concerned about more than any sort of like angles or power or contact questions. Because if you look at him in terms of like contact and power for college bats, he's near the very top of that list. There are a few players who have a better combination of those skills that he does. And also in terms of like home run track record, batting average, and strikeout rate in college, like all those numbers are pretty good for him.
Yeah, I can't debate that at all. You know, it's something that we discussed a little bit before the draft. Next name that we're going to move on to here is Von Lackey. And I feel like this one becomes very tricky, because I could get incredibly aggressive with him on a real life list. I mean, especially with catchers who can hit and can, you know, handle, you know, the work behind the plate, you know, a lot of games behind the plate and not see, you know, a lot of deterioration in the plate skills and the power. That's really, you know, important. And it's a valuable skill set in real life. In fantasy, unless you're in a two catcher league, you only need one, and you're not necessarily rostering catchers as like your util or like your bench bat or whatever. So there's always, for me at least, I discount catchers a ton. I still have him as like a top 50, 60 fantasy prospect, but I do have him like outside of the top four or five. And some of it is because like Adley Rutschman is like good. He's a good player. Right. It's not like he's ever been like a huge fantasy difference maker. I know he's had a ton of injuries, et cetera, but even like in his heyday, you know, there's only two or three catchers that are really that valuable, and they change from year to year. You can be Cal Raleigh 2025 or Cal Raleigh 2026. Right. No. So that's what I struggle with Lackey, but I do think that I could be really wrong on this one. He could be pretty special in terms of like the combination of a guy to a catcher who can hit.
Now, for fantasy purposes, I think that I would probably be in agreement with you on that one, Jeff. I think the other aspect of Von Lackey's profile that's interesting, and I'll be curious to see like what it actually looks like in pro ball with a wood bat is Von Lacky really does not have a significant track record of hitting for power. Entering his draft year in 2026, he came into the year with just 10 home runs under his belt, 6 homers as a sophomore, 4 in 2024. The big question was like, how much impact does Von Lacky have? He obviously added a ton of juice, and that led to him being the number 3 overall prospect and number 3 overall pick. How that translates to wood, I think, is really going to be crucial for like what his offensive profile actually is. He's an exceptional athlete. He runs really well. Is he going to continue stealing 10 plus bags in pro ball when he's catching every day? I wouldn't think so. Although he is one of these kind of outlier runners for a catcher, but so much of Von Lackey's value comes from what he can do with the glove. He's an exceptional receiver. He has a great arm. I just think he's going to do everything you need him to behind the plate, but like, does that translate into an impact fantasy player? I have more questions about what the offensive profile for him is going to look like for a fantasy perspective. So I would probably be perfectly fine with how you're kind of slotting him and discounting him, I think.
Yeah. And I think like, you know, he runs, how much is he going to run in 3 years, 4 years?
Right.
The other question was
so often with catchers, that tool just becomes irrelevant for them. Yeah.
And he did a ton of damage against ACC fastballs. Like in conference fastball numbers for him is a ton of his production. And I have to kind of question that a little bit too. He's not awful against breaking balls. He's not as good as some of these other top of the draft guys against different, you know, sliders and curveballs and off speed. But yeah, there's a little question there too. Like I still think for a catcher, he's going to clear the bar, you know, by a couple of feet. It's not going to be a huge issue, but yeah, I'm glad you kind of share that with me because it's always the question that I have when it comes to sort of any catcher. We're going to talk about another ACC hitter, actually a couple of them when we come back. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Do you remember growing up and seeing that something was sold out and it was literally sold out and you couldn't get a ticket?
Yes,
I do remember that. That's not a thing anymore.
Cried many times over that, Scott, but now we have SeatGeek. Even if it says sold out, you can find that perfect seat for you.
Yep. The official ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball is SeatGeek to find that seat for you, whether it's down the stretch, a team that you're following that's going to play postseason ball, or whatever you're going to game for. You want to see a particular pitcher. Eventually, playoff tickets, same thing, right? Playoff tickets generally sold out. Don't worry. SeatGeek has the spot.
Find your green dot. Find the green dot. Red dot, bad deal. Green dot, great deal. There's plenty of green dots for whatever game you want. Find it. Mm-hmm. Buy your tickets and go enjoy the game.
Code Territory10, 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app, and then the code will automatically be added to your account so that you can use it later.
All right. We are back. We are talking 2016 college draftee debuts. We might mix in Grady Emerson too. I think he's the only high school player that we're going to talk about, at least off the rip. Here with Carlos Collazo, we've talked through three names at the top of the draft already, and Rock Chalowski, Grady Emerson, and Von Lacky. Next name I want to bring up here is probably one of my favorite players in the draft from a fantasy perspective, and that's Zion Rose. Has had a pretty good debut. Slash line hasn't been outstanding. I've watched a few of those series because they've been taking on Peoria a couple times here at the end of the year, and I try to watch all my Cardinals affiliates every night because there's so many prospects. I have to figure out which guys are going to be pretty and which ones aren't. I've never had that problem before. I've always had bad systems. So it's unique and I'm a little anxious about getting it right. So I've seen a lot of Zion Rose, had a little bit of an injury at the beginning of the season. So we got a late start, put up insane numbers in conference against ACC competition this year. You know, pretty tooled up, former catcher, now an outfielder, not bad out there either. What are your thoughts on Rose? Because I could see him being a little bit more divisive because he can be a little passive at times. He's not doing that in his debut, though, which is what's kind of funny.
Yeah, I also think just the fact that like we weren't really expecting him to go where he was selected in the draft might add some more confusion or some hesitancy from people. But Zion Rose is fascinating because I feel like he does some things exceptionally well right now, which is make a lot of contact, and his swing decisions, I think, are pretty solid. as well. He runs at a, he might be a 70 grade raw runner at times. I think like how that actually plays in game can be a little bit volatile, a little bit up and down. But Zion Rose also hits the ball incredibly hard. And so I'm really curious to see how the swing is going to adapt, what sort of changes he's going to be able to make to tap into more of the raw power that he clearly does have. But he's not a player who elevates naturally. He's not a player who pulls the ball regularly. And so you could take that either way, depending on if you're going to be optimistic about him or pessimistic. Like, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit here. He has the strength to get to power. And also, like, defensively, so far he's only played left field, which I'm a little bit disappointed in. I would like to see him play center because, again, I think the raw athleticism and speed could make him valuable there. He needs to improve defensively wherever he's going to play. But he is the sort of athlete and has the sort of work ethic that I'd be really excited to see him in that position. So I think it's hit over power. But if you believe that Kansas City can help him elevate the ball more consistently moving forward, there's more power upside in the tank with him than some other players who win around the same range, like a Derek Curiel or like an Eric Booth who went on either side of him. I think his natural strength and physicality and ability to impact the ball leaves this like player development question kind of open and makes him a fascinating player.
I'll say this too. The thing that struck me the most, having watched him maybe 8 or 9 times now, because I'll cycle 3 games every 2 or 3 hours, more or less. Like, once the starters are out, I'll switch to something else. His baseball IQ is super high. Like, he makes a ton of good like decisions in the base pass. His takes are really good. He just does like the little things really well. And I don't think I was anticipating to come away from watching Zion Rose kind of saying that, right? But yeah, I think he does a lot of that stuff well. There's good bat to ball skills here. It's good plate skills. There's tools. But as you said, I think the sky's the limit. When it comes to some of these college guys, I'm a little bit more willing to gamble on that there, because I do think like he could make changes to his swing, to his bat path, and has enough like natural bat to ball skills that he could sacrifice a little bit of that without completely like bottoming out his profile, which is always kind of the concern with these guys that are like a little more fringy and need to do that.
One other element that was thrown out to me when just evaluating him for the draft itself, and I'm curious if you buy into this, but a lot of scouts think that like Louisville, what they do with hitters is a very hands-off sort of approach. They kind of let them hit how they hit and don't try to tinker with them too much. And there have been some hitters at Louisville who've come through the program and made adjustments in pro ball. So I wonder if like that element of like his hitting instruction background makes him more or less likely to make some adjustments at the next level. So far I don't know if it's changed already in pro ball, if you've seen it, Jeff, but it is just a very downhill or level swing path, that I think if you want him to tap into more power, probably going to need to see that change a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's still been pretty present. Like, he hasn't sort of changed how he's hit. And I don't expect anybody to necessarily do that straight away coming out of the draft.
That would be aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, has looked good. You know, I think maybe even better than the numbers, which aren't bad. But let's move on to somebody who's put up really good numbers, but I'm not surprised by it at all, in the Cal League, and that's Drew Burris. I think you came away pretty impressed. It's funny. His numbers look really good. He started out like the first week and a half or like 2 weeks of the season and like really struggled. Some of it was luck-based stuff. Wasn't like crazy strikeouts or anything. But he's really turned a corner and has been phenomenal. And I'm not shocked that Drew Burris is mashing, but I'm definitely not shocked that Drew Burris is mashing in the Cal League.
Yeah, I feel like Drew Burris has just kind of continued to do all the things that he did in college, which is elevate the ball and elevate the ball to the pull side. And if he's going to keep doing that with wood and is not going to see a noticeable drop off in like his exit velocities or the quality of his contact, he's going to be a really effective player, an impactful player. And I think for fantasy purposes, I'm maybe even more excited about Drew Burris than I would be for like real life prospect status, because there's also this speed element that probably doesn't get talked about with his game a ton. In part because I think that tool has regressed a little bit for him from his high school days when he would be turning in 70 grade run times. I think he's more of like a 55 grade runner. But he's a pretty effective base dealer. He has been so far. I know the low minors stolen base totals and numbers are kind of crazy. If you have any willingness at all to run, you can put up some gaudy numbers. But I think it's encouraging because Drew Burris, the whole question with him in college was, hey, he's undersized. He doesn't look like the typical top of the first round sort of hitter physically, because you're not going to be able to project too much on him from a strength standpoint. Is he going to have the bat speed and raw power that translates effectively from metal to wood? So far, that's not been an issue at all for him. He seems pretty optimized with what he does. The miss has been a little bit more concerning than I would expect it to. Of these top end college hitters, his miss rate is actually one of the higher marks so far. But he's barely in the like stabilization range. I guess he's pretty solidly through it. So that number is a little bit more concerning than I would have expected for him in low A, but everything else looks exactly like what I would have expected for Burris.
Yeah. And I think like just the, you know, I was always expecting with Burris to have a little bit of like hit tool regression. It's been a little worse than I anticipate, but I think some of that too, we have to compare and contrast. I think some of it was like the early portion of his adjustment to pro ball, you know?
Right.
I think
and he could be because he gets the ball in the air to the pole side so frequently.
So
he has a very aggressive approach, and the swing is a little steep at times. And so I think he might have more holes and be less of the pure hitter that maybe you would have expected given his numbers at Georgia Tech, because his numbers were insane.
Yeah.
And I would imagine pro pitchers will be able to kind of pick some holes, maybe really hammer him on the outer third and throw him quality secondaries that he really hasn't seen that can pick some holes in that profile. But I would expect his miss rate to be a little bit lower than it is right now.
Yeah.
Over the long haul.
Yeah. I think it will go down.
Frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is still pretty noisy. And like I said, that first couple of weeks was a little bit tricky, et cetera. I think I'll make adjustments. And one of these sort of underrated elements, I think, to hit tools is just like the ability to hit the ball at good angles, right? Like the ability to like backspin the ball or like hit it consistently, your pull side. Like that's what makes Kevin McGonigal's hit tool so outlier, right? It's not just the bat to ball and the good swing decisions, which is like, great. That's a great foundation. But we see a lot of guys that have that and they fall into like seven different buckets in terms of the different types of hitters they are, depending upon the type of impact that they make, how hard they hit it, you know, whether they do backspin the ball, you know, in the air, whether they backspin it to their pull side or not.
Right.
He does that so well that I just kind of believe in these guys that have angles will get through some of these struggles, because it seems to be the case. The next guy is a really interesting case study as well. He's Chris Akopian, with the Nationals first round pick out of Texas A&M, previously at Maryland. I'm not shocked by his numbers at all, because I saw him for a few games a couple weeks ago. And it's like really quality at bats. I don't know if he had a whiff in at bats. I saw he like makes a ton of contact, but it's a very level swing. There's not a lot of angles there, and he's in Wilmington, which is not a great place to hit for power either. And really a lot of the parks he's played in, Hudson Valley and a few others, aren't, but he doesn't elevate the ball anyway. So it wouldn't be a problem even if he was playing in the most homer friendly parks in the minor league. If he was Reading, it probably wouldn't matter. So he's a funny one because I do think the hit tool is so good. He hits the ball really, really hard, but there's not a lot of speed to go along with it. And he's at second base now. I don't know if he's going to stick there long term. Like, it's funny because he's faster than you think he is. Like, I got some solid 55 run times. Like, he gets out of the box quicker than you think, and he moves quicker, better than you think. But his like lateral movement is so bad that I don't know if you even would put him at first base. It almost feels like he's a left fielder.
I feel like he
defensive, like, I don't know how I rank Chris Akopian above Ace Reese right now, unless I totally buy into hit tool and plate skills above everything else and say he'll figure out the angles.
Right. Because he's also right-handed hitter compared to Ace Reese hitting left-handed.
Exactly.
You mentioned the athleticism questions. I agree with you. I think that there's real risk here that it's first base, DH, left field, and you're hoping he can just kind of not embarrass himself at those positions. The way he moves around the field defensively is kind of startling at times. And he has had back injuries and some health issues. So perhaps as he gets further away from that, that could loosens up a little bit. But I really think with Chris Hacopian, you're buying contact skills, like you mentioned, and just the strength and power and his ability to impact the ball, and hoping that with this new Nationals player development group, you can get him to optimize those angles. Because like you said, Jeff, I mean, he has been one of the least air pole centric hitters of these top end guys we're going to talk about. If you look at like even just the batted ball data, like his pull rate is 12.5% right now, outside of like if he's elevating it, he's just not turning on the baseball, which I don't think inherently is an issue in this small of a sample. He has been a guy who's been able to hit for power in college, and I think he'll be able to hit for power even if he's using all fields to do so, because he is so strong and his contact quality is so good. But it is an unusual sort of batted ball profile that's coupled with real defensive questions. But I think in the draft, I mentioned this with Rock Chulowski, but I think Chris Hacopian was probably the single player you could point to and say, hey, his combination of contact ability, bat to ball skills, and impact exit velocity data. I think his 90th percentile exit velocity through September 1st is better than any player that we're going to mention on today's podcast. And so if you want to buy into traits that are hard to teach and are going to provide value, I mean, you can't go too wrong with contact and power. So that's really what you're buying here.
Exactly. It's a 106 90th percentile EV. That's in pro ball. Ace Reese, just comparatively with all those home runs, 102.9. I expect that number to probably jump, though.
Well, but I'm curious. I know you have Ace Reese down. I feel like we should talk about him right now, unless there's another player you want to go to.
Let's do it. Because I have Hacopian in the first iteration of the FYP.
Yeah.
Updated again. I do have Hacopian over Ace Reese, like just as college players, a lot of what you said, the contact and the power. That's what I'm buying into. Having kind of watched both, it's like maybe the thing that you want to do, Reese is already doing. And like, forget the EVs right now because it's like kind of noisy and we don't know if there's some balls or whatever even. But he backspins it and he hits it in the air hard. I don't have any questions about Ace Reese's power translating. It's just a matter of like, how bad is his swing and miss going to be? You know, and it's been not awful. It's been fine. I mean, it's low A, but it hasn't been like, oh God, this is going to be a major problem kind of thing.
Yeah. Even when we were kind of lining up this draft class throughout the spring, I remember constantly being super annoyed about like, oh, do we want to have Ace Reese? Do we want to have Chris Hacopian? They finished 11 and 12 on our board. So if you're looking at kind of draft results, I do think they're like their draft capital, it maybe speaks to a bigger gap than I think exists between the true talent. Like we had them neck and neck and in the same tier the entire time. And I know Jeff was writing about this all spring, but I think Ace Reese did finish as the barrel leader in college baseball or very close. He was up there with Gavin Kelly, I think was the other one. So far,
I think it was Gavin Kelly won, and then it was Ace Reese like right behind him.
Yeah, what Ace Reese does is such a great, it's so natural for him, maybe just because of how the swing path naturally works, but he hits the ball at these ideal angles. Right now, his barrel rate is just under 33%, which is the best of all of these top 30 pro debut hitters we're talking about. I think he does have maybe a full grade worse pure contact skill compared to Chris Hacopian, but there is a sort of advanced approach and a hitterish trait that he brings to the table. I think he manages his at bats pretty well. I think he's going to make solid swing decisions. Now, you're always going to have to live with a little bit of swing and miss with him, but I think because he'll get on base via the walk, because when he does hit the ball, he's going to hit it hard. I'm with you. I think the exit velocities are going to look like as solid as you would expect for a player of his profile. And when he does hit the ball, he'll be maximizing the in-game power he gets to because they're going to come at ideal angles. I'm pretty bullish on this profile now, even more so. And I think you're also looking at a guy who might wind up being a first baseman. So I don't know that there's too much like defensive difference in terms of the value you're getting. Maybe you say that Ace Reese just has a slightly better chance to stay on the left side of the infield, but I think it'd be pretty unlikely for him to play third base at the major league level, just given his actions and speed and hands there. But we've seen players improve defensively before. So I'm pretty excited about what Ace Reese has shown.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's honestly going to go higher than he probably should in some fantasy drafts. I think he's going to
just because the debut is like the 200 work plus is going to do a lot. He has been the best debut hitter so far. So.
Yeah, 100%. Like there's somebody that's going to rank him 7 or 6 or something like that. And I think that's too high. Where I have him now, like maybe at like 18 or 17, I have to go back and look at the list, is probably too low. But I do think like somewhere in that, you know, maybe like that 9 to 12 range is perfectly reasonable.
Do you feel like you
there's going to be Sato and maybe what Morishita and a couple of pitchers that come over from Japan this year.
Gotcha.
So that's going to kind of move the board down a little bit by the time most people are drafting in Japan too. But what were you going to say?
Do you feel like you still are pretty torn between Hakopian and Reese, or do you feel like you're leaning towards one of those or the other?
I'll bring them closer together. It's tough, you know, because I feel like there is some inherent risk with Hakopian that the angles don't come along, and it's an average hitter who hits the ball really hard, and then like all you hold on, and then you quit, and then at like 26, he finally makes the adjustment.
Right,
you know, it's great, and you're like, see, I was always right, you know. Mm-hmm. Because that's how baseball is. I think that some of those narratives and like that element with fantasy kind of got to work into your roster construction. I would take either of them in an FYPD and be pretty happy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do think they're the type of college hitters that can work because they're power guys, you know, that's either actualized or it's something that like, yeah, you could change the angles, coax a little bit more out of him.
Right.
And, you know, you hope that maybe even some of the back stuff or whatever it is that Hakopian's dealt with, once that's kind of more in the rearview mirror, maybe he's able to make different types of adjustments, et cetera, and do different types of work. The next guy I want to ask about is interesting because I felt like there was a ton of negativity around this guy kind of like during the draft, right before the draft, right after it, in terms of like as a pick, and that's Ryder Helfrich, Arkansas catcher that was drafted by the Diamondbacks. Kind of fully didn't get it.
I'm with you. Like I like the pick at the time.
And like his angles are always good and he hits the ball hard and like the hit tool's good enough that his debut's been really good. And I feel like a lot of the data looks exactly like he did in college. So I wanted to bring him up because I feel like this is another guy that, you know, you're not going to pay the premium price that you're paying on Von Lackey, but the way catching is and the way, you know, some of these guys trend, this isn't a bad gamble, like later in the first round or maybe like as a second round pick, depending upon how many teams are in your league. If you're like in a 12 team league, you have the fifth pick, like, you know, the third pick in the second round and you need I could see taking a shot on Helfrich because I do think there's enough hit tool here with good EVs and pretty good angles, and he hits the ball hard in the air to his pull side consistently. So like, I kind of don't understand why he got hated on as much as he did, because I just don't think that's around.
Well, I mean, we had Ryder Helfrich ranked as the number 7 player in the class. So he was the first player we had ranked after our top, like that top 6, that was kind of consensus. And then once you get 7+, it starts to get a little bit more muddled. So even where he went in the draft, I thought, oh, this is great value for the Diamondbacks. I like the pick quite a bit. And granted, a lot of that opinion is based on like actual real life and less fantasy. But Ryder Helfrich really is a great defensive catcher right now. He receives the ball well. He has strong hands. He has an incredibly strong arm. I think there are probably some actions and some blocking that could be improved, but that's like the easiest thing to improve in pro ball. So I have no doubts that he's going to stick at the position. This isn't some sort of college catcher where you're like crossing your fingers and hoping he can play there. No, he's a good catcher right now. he has tremendous bat speed and raw power. It is electric watching him swing. He never shortens up. Maybe he'll need to figure out how to make an adjustment with two strikes. To this point, the same hack he's taking 2-0 looking to do damage is the same hack he's taking when he's in a 1-2 count. There's not a lot of shortening up there. And I do think that he's a below average contact hitter. But that said, he does get the ball in the air. He elevates and celebrates very routinely. So far in his pro debut, he's done that at a dramatic rate that's probably not sustainable. But I do think at catcher, I mean, how many catchers in pro ball do we see are 30 grade pure hitters who are good defenders who bring power? I think he has the sort of prototypical everyday catching package. And I do think from a fantasy perspective, probably the premium you're going to have to pay for Von Lackey compared to Ryder Helfrick versus the difference in value you might be getting in a fantasy format. I'd be really excited about getting Ryder Helfrick wherever he's going. If you're not having to pay top 15 capital in a FYPD for Ryder Helfrick, I'd be really excited about the potential impact he could get you there.
Well, and I just want to throw this out there too, just to support it. His expected batting average is over 30 points higher than his actual batting average. And his expected slug is 60 points higher than his actual slug, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like his OPS is almost like 80 points higher expected than it actually is. And he's hitting. It's not like his numbers are bad, you know.
And he's got a 111 WRC plus right now. Exactly. With a 25% strikeout rate. He's hitting for power. Yeah. He's got
a 941 OPS and yeah. he's underproducing that. Like he's like underproducing what his actual numbers are. You just don't see that a whole lot. I mean, it's a 21 game sample. So take it with a grain of salt, and it is Visalia. It is the Cal League, but 21 games and, you know, he's already got 14 extra base hits. Like he's doing what he's supposed to be doing and he's not striking out at an alarming rate. So, you know, that's good to hear. Two more guys and then we'll wrap this up. Last name that I wanted to bring up to you, second to last, penultimate name I'm going to bring up to you, Logan Hughes. I felt like he's been on a rocket ship since like April. Felt like one of those guys that just kept rising in the rankings. Every time we talked to somebody, it was like, you could probably move Logan Hughes up. And it's like,
yeah,
you just moved him up. You know, it's like, you can't. That's one of the things that stinks about ranking and not like just changing your rankings every day, like you're some guy on Twitter, is that like, you know what I mean though? Like, cause like it's awesome. Like you can do that. Like back, I was that guy at one point. I was like, yeah, I can just change it and move this guy higher. Cause I think it needs to happen. There's certain dates. Like I'd love to move Rydell Rodriguez up 15 spots. I can't do it until the off season, you know, like there's certain things we're not going to be able to do.
Yeah.
Logan Hughes, it felt like every time we talked to outside evaluators with teams, et cetera, to solicit feedback, he was a guy we were always getting told to move up, move up, move up. Goes 17th overall. It's low A. So once again, take it with a grain of salt. He has been awesome over 20 games. 333, 441, 577, 3 home runs, 8 stolen bases. Obviously walking a ton, not really striking out. Underlying data is really good. Don't want to buy too much into it, but you know, where does sort of Hughes rank among some of these guys that we're talking about, especially like more like the Reeses, the Hacopians?
Yeah, I feel like he's actually a pretty solid middle ground between Chris Hacopian and Ace Reese in terms of like what he does well, what he brings to the table. Of all the players we've talked about and really all the players in the draft, he has one of the more exciting hit power combinations. It's funny, when I was watching him in person this year, I caught him week one. And I think that was probably the only week where he wasn't good. He swung and missed a lot. He expanded the zone. I was like, man, coming into the season, really expected Logan Hughes to have this really advanced, like pure hitting approach. And after that, I was like, not as good as I thought. And then I looked at the numbers and it's like every week he's destroying the ball. So I saw like the worst possible stint for him, not representative at all. But he has always throughout his career made a ton of contact, minimized his strikeouts. He had just a 12.2% career strikeout rate, 2 seasons with Texas Tech, 1 with Stetson, and he got to a lot of power. He hit 10 or more home runs each season, 19-18 in his 2025 and 2026 seasons. He's big and strong. It's a ton of raw power. The exit velocities are really loud. And he doesn't have the same sort of lift questions. At least he hasn't shown it so far. I don't think that was ever really the case for him in college as Hakopian. All of his limitations on the baseball field are defensive and profile and speed questions. Like, he does feel like a set him and forget him in left field. If you get fringy or below average defense, you're probably happy with that. He's very much a bat first player. That feels like the sort of profile that you can kind of boost him up in a fantasy format. His average exit velocity with wood so far has been tremendous. And I'm always a little bit hesitant to reference just average EV because it just seems noisier. But there's no doubt that he hits the ball incredibly hard. And so I think like where the Astros selected him, a little bit higher than where our rankings would have liked. But to your point, Jeff, like it's one of those things where like if we could keep updating and updating, he would have kept going higher. And they're looking pretty good for this pick right now. I think outside of Ace Reese, he's been one of the most productive debut hitters so far in official games.
Yeah, and you brought up like, you know, the EVs are pretty good across the board. And it's a 10% zone miss rate right now.
Yeah,
granted, small sample size, whatever, but.
But again, it's not like this is a guy who had missed questions in college.
Exactly.
He never struck out a lot. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's so exciting is you get some of these mm-hmm. tools. Like this could be, I feel like this is a name that's going to jump a lot on fantasy lists. I think we had him somewhere in the teens. I had him above Ace Reese.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that probably still is the case. You could convince me to put him above Hakopian. I understand high A for Hakopian, yeah. Not the easiest part to hit in, but I don't know. I still could sort of see that mm-hmm. working that way. You know, they were drafted pretty closely, ranked pretty closely. All right. Last name we're going to bring up here, I think is probably the most interesting player just from a debate and et cetera standpoint in the draft and has been sort of for a year. And that's Justin LeBron. His debut has been awesome. He has looked very good, hitting for a lot of power. We've seen this before. We've seen him beat up on lesser competition. It is high A, so he does deserve some credit in that sense. There are still some strikeouts here. There is still some swing and miss concern. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look at like a power and speed combination and what the value of that is in fantasy, he's a very exciting fantasy prospect, maybe more so than a real life one. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's been a very good debut for him. There's not a lot bad to call out, even in the underlying data.
Yeah, Justin LeBron is like tremendously exciting and tremendously terrifying. And I think this is true of him as a real life prospect and a fantasy player. If you're looking at it just through fantasy lens, like I was talking about how I saw the bad of Logan Hughes in person. I saw the good of Justin LeBron in person. And after coming away from that, I was like, oh, this guy, he's going to challenge Rock Chalowski for like 1-1 status. He didn't obviously live up to that. He had some hitting struggles. And for me, I think I am going to be just like, hey, I'm not really changing my opinion at all of Justin LeBron based on this debut, because you are seeing some of the same flaws in his game right now under the hood. I think there are my biggest concern with Justin LeBron is he has never had success with secondaries. He's never had shown an ability to pick up spin at the level that I think you just have to be able to do to succeed at the major league level. Even with his, I think it's 7 home runs he's had so far. He's been one of the better power hitters of debut players. His ability to hit his best, his hardest contact is coming in the air to the pull side. That's a great recipe for success for this. I have no doubts about his like hand speed and bat speed and ability to handle velocity. One of his home runs was against a 97 mile per hour fastball from Kendry Churio. That's really exciting. For me, I think this is just like evident of what Justin LeBron's tool set and athleticism can do in short stints, even when he is still a flawed hitter. And I feel like I will need a much longer track record and sample size to see the adjustments he's going to be able to make in pro ball to know like what sort of pure hitter we're going to get and the adjustments that he is or isn't going to be able to make. He is almost like epitome of a player who in small stints can carry a team because the tools are just that electric. The athleticism is that apparent. And I do think he is like probably the best runner and the most like guaranteed stolen base. Like check it off. If you're getting Justin LeBron, he's a dynamic runner and an excellent base stealer. I just still want to see a lot more pro reps from him to feel good about the pure hitter because we, Jeff, how many times did we go into the year and say, okay, Justin LeBron, if you just handle conference pitching this time, then you're great. And he just never did. And so
no, he never does. That's it. It's like once he gets to double A, that to me is like really where the big question is. But I do think that he fell enough in the draft that just based on like pure, you know, if you just took the players in order of where they were drafted, he's not going to get shoved up as much. This debut might help to kind of push him back up. There's going to be somebody out there who's going to get super aggressive on him. I think I could see myself drafting him at some point. Like if it's like 20 or after, there's probably 100%. Some value there. Yeah. If it's more like 9 to 15, I'll probably lean on some of these other guys that we've already talked about. Cause I do think that, like you said, he should like some of these SEC guys, they should hit against A ball pitching, whether even it's high A, even, you know, they should hit a lot of these guys. I do think his debut has been a little bit better than I would have expected with him going directly to high A.
I agree.
So I want to give him some credit there that it has been better. Maybe there's some adjustments. The Reds don't have a great history of coaching these risky hitters that they bring into their organizations along and finding a happy middle ground. And like they've done a lot of it recently, right? I mean, they went after Tyson Lewis and he's had his struggles and kind of turned a corner maybe a little bit. Steel Hall looks good, now goes at the A ball. He looks kind of fragile, like that hit tool is more of a concern. So there is some of that too.
The Reds like clearly love guys, athletes and tools,
like, and I like it, but you need to have the player development mechanisms in place to help those guys along, to help them make the adjustments. You can't just draft the toolsy guys and then not have any sort of like player plan for them that's really going to get them to the other side of, you know, the bridge. So yeah, I don't know. Carlos, I want to thank you for joining me doing another fantasy podcast, talking to some draft guys. Go and check out that article. It's up on baseballamerica.com. Stay tuned. If you're a fantasy focus subscriber of ours, stay tuned to our socials today. We have a massive announcement regarding Baseball America Fantasy going forward that I think people are going to be very excited about. That's my big market tease there, Carlos. But
yeah, I'm for pumped, joining you. So that'll be fun. Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. Anytime. Happy to talk draft guys. This is fun.
And this has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.